Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Leslie Appleton Young. Leslie is the Chief Economist and Vice President for the California Association of Realtors. California Association of Realtors has 195,000 members approximately dedicated to the advancement of professionalism in real estate. Leslie directs the activities of the association's member information group. She oversees the analysis of housing markets and brokerage industry trends, member communications, and membership development activities. She's also closely involved with the association's strategic planning efforts and is a well-known speaker in California real estate community. Leslie, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Bruce. Delighted to be here.
And adding to your fame is the Friday night appearance at I Survive Real Estate for the, I don't know how many times. So thank you so much for being willing to do that.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's a wonderful cause and it's a great group of people.
I think you and I probably talked for the first time on the radio, ballpark of 08. And I really can't imagine having the job of going around to all those groups back then and imparting to them nothing that was very happy.
You know, I felt like a motivational speaker was really, really the challenge. You know, it was a very tough market. Although I've got to say, the market today is a good market, but it's tough for everybody.
You know, I was going to ask you about the mood of the people. You had just taken a look into 2016 and kind of saw what you saw coming. But it's interesting that you say, you know, I feel like the I Survive Real Estate title certainly is, you know, it's just because it's what we used in 08 and when it was really appropriate. But it's still no picnic out there. It really is not an easy market.
It's not an easy market, and there's just, I think, one huge intractable issue. Well, actually two, and one that you and I love talking about, which is housing affordability. But the second one is really a twist on housing affordability, and I'm seeing this in the data, and I'm hearing this anecdotally over and over again. Existing homeowners can't afford to trade up, and they are staying in their homes longer. They are not listing like they used to, so kind of the rate of turnover in the market has dropped significantly compared to where it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on. There's having a low rate mortgage. There's the kind of backside of Prop 13, which means I don't want to move because I'm going to lose that. There's capital gains concerns. There's, I don't know if I could actually qualify for a mortgage. I got one easily, you know, in the past, but it's a lot different now. But there's all these other kind of currents going on that are keeping people in their homes a lot longer, and that's just rippling through the entire market.
You know, In my head, I thought ownership 5 years. That was in my head. And I, at one time, and because of your the report that you just gave, I had a chance to look at the chart that you provided, and I didn't realize it was 10 now.
Well, there's different ways of measuring it. So the 10 years that I used in my remarks was from our annual housing market survey, where we've been surveying realtors in June of every year for 35 years. So one of the questions is, how long had the seller been in their home? And this year, it was 10 years, and that's the highest we've ever recorded, right? If you just kind of take a ratio of housing units to sales, it's 18 years. So this is something that explains a lot. You know, it's kind of like the glue that holds all these disparate pieces together and makes a clear picture, because we have obviously a very great, attractive rate environment. California's economy is outperforming the nation in job growth, income growth. Certainly, we're seeing that, you know, most dramatically in the Bay Area, but in Southern California as well, absolutely. And yet, we're just not seeing the opportunities for first-time home buyers because the current homeowners are kind of aging in place and figuring out, you know what, I'm just going to redo my house. I'm going to get a contractor in here and do this, that, and the other thing and just stay put.
one of the providers of housing, usually for the first-time buyer, is a new house.
Right.
And it's kind of been non-existent, especially in that category of price range. Because if you're a builder, you know, you'd love to be able to produce a profitable house at 250 grand and have it fly off the shelf and build a million of them, but the costs are so high.
Right. It's a hostile environment for developers in California, and it's very tough. I mean, in any other state, to see the kind of price appreciation that we've seen and recovery from the bottom, you would have seen a much faster supply response, and it is responding, you know, and we'll be, upwards of 100,000 units this year and a little bit more next year. I think it tells a lot about the pain of what we've been through, that half of the new construction is multifamily.
Well, I was just going to say, when you say 100,000 number, and it's including multifamily, that's really a very different number for
right.
the single family. I mean, we're almost at 50-year lows other than the last couple of years. We're really
right.
not building new homes at a pace that we used to in 1955 or something like that.
No, we're not. And so the demographic flow is going to be millennials out of California. And I think we're seeing it as a trickle now. I think it's going to get much more pronounced as you see cities, you know, Portland, Seattle, Denver, you know, Austin, providing kind of a cool vibe and affordable housing, certainly compared to the centers here.
Well, it's interesting. Austin is certainly one of those places that's benefited. They have the right job base. They have the young people. The millennial generation, you know, it's just an interesting group of people looking at some of your charts, noticing that only 20% of them at this point own their own home. That's got to be very low for that age category than typical generations prior to them.
Well, it is. And this generation got hit with an economy that just wasn't providing housing, jobs. And so they weren't able to kind of get their life started. So they've, you know, I call it delayed adulthood by about 10 years. And they've moved back in with their parents. And the boomer parents, I've kind of made a joke about this, but I actually think it's true, are fairly codependent with their children and have been only too happy to help out and have their kids back at home. And that's all good. I'm actually doing that a little tongue-in-cheek. But I think both sides kind of benefited, and there just wasn't a lot of urgency or pressure to kind of get out and get going, and the economy wasn't supporting it. So you're going to see some very significant quick changes over the next 5 years or so as these millennials are getting well into their 30s, getting married and having children. And that's when people get pretty serious about home ownership, when they're really looking at a family environment.
It looked like from some of the charts that you had provided that 2015 was a pretty healthy household formation year.
Yes, yes. It's definitely starting to come back, and it's correlated with the jobs data that's there, that's just showing how rapidly we're growing jobs. Particularly, again, the Bay Area is the strongest, so it's a great employment situation for people with those skills, but certainly we need to say that there's a lot of people being left out of those opportunities. So there's a lot of retooling and retraining and redirecting that has to go on.
What comprises the typical household at this point? You know, it used to be the joke, you know, this is like the 2.3 kids and the mom and dad. That's pretty much changed now.
Well, I think it's a kaleidoscope, you know, and it's that other category that, you know, had, you know, single heads of households and same-sex partners and couples, and that has grown. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a much more significant part of the housing scene, if you will. And I think it's most dramatic in the single women who have entered the labor force and either ended up or stayed on their own and are buying homes, because there doesn't seem to be a change in the understanding of how important home ownership is to building wealth and a long-term financial plan. But what changed was, in earlier generations, you actually had job opportunities when you graduated from high school and college. And the kids that came out in 08, 09, 2010 just didn't have that.
Well, when you're a single adult and you have to qualify on your own, that's a pretty impactful thing when you're trying to get California's median price purchase.
Right, and there were a series of slides in my presentation that looked at income needed to qualify to buy that median-priced home, and what the comparable jobs of kind of normal people. And regardless of the area, and if I can remember this correctly, if you were an IT programmer or a registered nurse, you had a chance of doing it on your own, but just about everybody else would need a dual income situation in order to qualify to buy that median priced home.
And one thing that I noticed when I looked at that report and those charts was that if you had the right profession in an area like Sacramento, you would have an easy time to qualify. If you were unfortunately living in San Jose, you would have no way to qualify.
Right. And I think that's another dynamic that's happening, is that for the fortunate few that have boomer parents that can help them out, that's just been a godsend, you know, to have a family that's able to give you the down payment, because that remains the number one hurdle. Obviously, getting a job and having a W-2 and a stable income is key. But the down payment, saving for that down payment, as always, but even more so, has been an issue. And so having parents that are able to help you out is a huge plus today.
One thing that's starting to occur and has for the last few years is a lot more net coming from the sale of a property. So people are selling now. I think the net was about 120. That's down
right
from the peak, you know, when it was over 200 or so. But it's a much healthier down payment to bring to the next transaction. Is that what happens to most of those dollars, do you know? Do most of those dollars just say, well, we'll put that going forward, or does it
leave
out?
Yeah, I mean, the great majority today are buying another home, which wasn't true a few years ago, because essentially it was a foreclosure, their credit wasn't good, they really weren't able to do it even if they had the money, but they were also, you know, very low net cash or even negative for many people, right, that were under that were underwater. So today it's much more, we've got the cash to trade up. I'll tell you the biggest problem, and I mentioned it earlier, is all the other things that you give up. You know, you sell your home and you get, you know, $120,000, which is that median from that survey, but you're going to maybe give up a 3% 30-year mortgage if you had, you know, refied 3 years ago.
Right.
You're going to give up that Prop 13 tax base, which is more attractive the longer you've been in a home, and you're putting yourself into a very competitive market where you are going to be likely in over half of the transactions are multiple offers. Even today, a couple years ago it was over 70%, but now it's about 53% of the realtors are saying their last transaction had multiples. So it's just a little scary, and it's expensive.
Yeah, getting a yes answer from a lender too. You'd have to be pretty darn sure you're going to get a yes answer, and I can see in this environment you'd be pretty doubtful. So that's,
well, if you're a plain vanilla borrower, you're going to be fine. If it's a loan that they can easily sell to one of the GSEs, the Fannie or Freddie, it's there's a lot more documentation. Nobody wants to have to take the loan back if something happens. It's a little bit more than that, and I may be one of the few people in the industry that's going to say this. Sometimes I go to these meetings and I feel like I am the only one that remembers that we almost had a global financial meltdown, largely because of fraud in real estate finance, but that's just, you know, partly my view here. I think it's important to make sure that people can qualify and can pay things back. I think the other issue, and just to kind of segue into public policy for one second, I think being a lot more careful about cash out refis is critical to avoiding another problem. Because when you look at the data from what happened, a great majority of those people got into trouble because they had no cushion when housing prices started to fall. I mean, for years, monitoring the housing market, one of the things up until 2007, one of the things that was just mystifying was housing prices are very sticky on the way down. But that's because people had equity in their home. You know, if you don't have equity, it's nail in the keys and I'm gone. So there's a lot of issues related to qualifying, and I think some of them are positive changes because there were, I think everyone would agree that there were loans made in the mid part of the last decade that should never have been made.
Absolutely. Now that's, and unfortunately what happened was because of those lending policies, you got prices to push you to an area that was impossible to sustain, and then right. all those people that got in under false pretenses, they had nothing to lose by walking, so they right. so they did. And right. if you were a legitimate buyer that put down 40% so you could pay your payment, that 40% disappeared inside of 2 years.
Right. And I think the feeling was, well, let me get cash out and make my home nicer, you know, because obviously this is a very safe investment. So let me put a pool in. Let me get a new Viking. I mean, everybody was kind of drinking that Kool-Aid, and yeah. it all made a lot of sense until it didn't.
Well, in Corona, there's a tract of homes that's built by an expensive tract builder. And you can see the demarcation of, okay, that house was built in 06, and that house was built in 08, because the yard in the 06 one is extravagant. It's got everything you could imagine, and then the one 2008 has grass.
Right.
And that's
right.
it.
But it seemed like a safe bet, you
yeah.
know, and the industry was supporting that that analysis.
Well, I wonder if, you know, this is one of those things that it's, you don't have a chart for, but if you were one of the people that thought that housing wouldn't go down and you got hammered, is there a hangover for wanting to get involved in the next one?
You know, it's the demand for housing has been so strong, and so it's hard to answer that because certainly there's not like a void where we're missing demand. I think the other kind of question is what's going on in rentals, and there's a housing affordability crisis in rental housing. I had a friend who was trying to get a rental in Orange County and was had to, you know, do what a lot of the buyers do for an ownership situation, which was have a whole file and a letter to the landlord and pictures of his kids and all this stuff, because for three other opportunities he'd lost out. So the housing crisis isn't just in home ownership, it is in the rental side. So if you're looking at rent prices that are going up and you're looking at housing prices that are going up, what's going to make the most sense? And I think people are rational, certainly rational to make the obvious decision there, the obvious choice.
Well, the one thing that is, and why rental, you know, rental housing is a dynamic moving number, because
yes.
somebody that owns a rental at the first of the year, they're looking to say, okay, can I move the rent up? And if you get a fixed payment, obviously you've taken care of that part of the wild card of your budget. It's going to stay that way.
Right.
Affordability number, it's pretty healthy historically, right? We're at what, 30 or 32?
Well, but 2 years ago, we were at 50.
Yeah, but we were never at 50, ever. we had a depression of prices. So
well, I guess it's, you know, I guess there are charts and numbers, and then there's the reality. And we just talked about looking at the incomes by profession and what you need to qualify to buy that median-priced home. And what an index doesn't tell you is how competitive the market is. Right, and what the overbids look like and what it looks like to lose out to an all-cash buyer over and over and over again. So I don't know if 31% or 32% is a good number or not, to be honest with you. What I do know is that California prices are way out of sync with what we're seeing for the nation as a whole, that we're not engaging in an adequate supply response, and that the result is going to be losing some of our best and brightest to other states. And by that, I don't just mean, you know, software engineers. I'm talking about the middle class, mm-hmm. right? Teachers and firemen and all of that, looking at options in other states. So it's kind of a recipe for a, you know, a bankrupt California a little bit when people can't afford to rent or buy reasonably close to where they work.
Is that what's happened before as affordability has gone down from 30 to 20?
I mean, people have to make choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
People have to make choices, you know, if they can't afford here and don't have parents to help them out, and may not be willing to make the kind of sacrifices where they're, you know, spending 75% of their monthly income on housing, they're going to look other places. So you may not be seeing it happen today, and you could probably make an excellent argument that 32% is a great number, but I just see storm clouds ahead. I feel very uncomfortable with the inability of California to embrace high-density development along transportation corridors.
Okay. The buyer in 2005 or 6, if you ask them why you're buying, it was because I'm going to make money. And the buyer in 2015, why are they buying?
You know, I think they're buying because it's a good long-term investment. I don't get the vibe that there's a short-term in and out as much as a long-term look at it. You have people that have been on the sidelines because of the recession and the slow recovery that are now getting in, and they're just, it's so hard to get in these days that it's like, wow, let's just let me stay put. So, you know, certainly you still have a very active investor. It's not as active as it was, but you still have investors in the market. You still have some flipping going on. But in general, the buyer is a real solid long-term buyer.
And I think the reason I would miss not owning a home, I mean, I don't care if it went up or down, I would miss not being able to make those decisions. And I think that's what we've kind of gotten back to, is some of the basics of saying, you know what, I want to call the shots in this 70 by 100 lot that I have. I get to paint it purple, or I get to do an addition or have a barbecue or whatever without asking a soul. And I think that's healthy. I'm glad it's kind of gone back to that.
But it's not for everybody. And I think there's a lot of trade-offs. You know, a lot of people prefer to be in an urban environment. And if you don't have kids and aren't, you know, focused on school quality or school issues, a lot of people find kind of the suburban lifestyle a little boring, you know, and they want to be where they can walk places. And I think all of that ought to be encouraged, because I don't know if you saw the report from the LAEDC. They gave their economic forecast a couple of weeks ago, and they had a speaker from PricewaterhouseCoopers, who does a lot of work on sustainability, you know, and one of the things that really struck me is he made this point that between January 1st and July 14th, California, and maybe, I don't know if this was U.S. or California, but the point was all the resources we've used up can be replenished, but after July 14th, we can't. You know, we're going into a deficit mode just in terms of our natural resource use. And if you look at what a household in a 1,400 square foot townhome or condo consumes versus a 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 square foot suburban home, it's day and night. And so the reality of life going forward is going to be, I think, by necessity, and also by by choice, because the millennials, and again, this may, I may be wrong, and this may look very different when they have a family, but there seems to be more tolerance for high density. They don't want to spend the amount of time that you need to in a car commuting to and from work in order to have that, you know, that lot size that you described.
We are going to talk about that on Friday night. We really are. And that'll be a lot of fun, because that urbanization and gentrification,
yes.
I think that kind of go together. We've run out of time for right now. So, Leslie, thank you so much for joining us. And it'll be very fun Friday night. We'll have a good time.
My pleasure. I'm really looking forward to seeing you, Bruce.
Okay. Thanks again, Leslie.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.